Okay, this week is Parashas Vayeshev. Let's start with a few remozim, a few raw ideas. Okay, before we get to some more deeper ideas, we're learning Chumash Parashas Vayeshev. This week I saw something very interesting in the pleasant way. The pleasant way is a sefer that was written by Rav Shalom Smith, one of Rav Palm's Talmidim. And he says over a story, a very interesting story that happened in the Volozhno Yeshiva. There was once a dispute between two of the Rashi HaYeshiva. About a Derech HaLimud, I do not know the details, but there was a dispute, so they decided to bring in outside counsel, to bring in the Rabbanim.
Just between the two and the...
Yes, and who was the other one? The Beis Halevi, correct. And the Sivan the Beis Halevi, so they decided to bring in outside counsel to arbitrate this dispute. And among the people they brought in was the Magid of Vilna, if I'm not mistaken. And the Magid of Vilna's name was Rav Velvel. And before they began to discuss the issue, he said that this is not going to be an easy thing to discuss, because... And he gave the following mashal. My job, my parnasa, is... I'm a magid. I give drashas. So, I see before me Parshas Vayeshev. What does it mean, I see before me Parshas Vayeshev? All the parshios, he says, it's very easy. There are forces of good and forces of evil. Every parsha. So you always know a magid has to give musar. It's always good against evil, and good has to prevail. So until Parashas Vayeshev, I have a very easy time giving drashos, doing my service of being a magid. In Parashas Bereishis, we have the force of good, Adam and Chava. The force of evil is the Nochash HaKadmoini. The whole parasha is all built around the principle of the Chet Eitz Hadas. There is good and bad. Good is clearly defined. Adam and Chava. And the bad is the Yetzahara, the Nochash HaKadmoini. So this is what we discuss. Parashas Noach. We have the Tzadik, Noach, Ish Tzadik, Tamuya B'Dayroisav. And what are the forces of evil? The generation of Noach. Dor HaMabul, they were sinners. The world had to come to an end, and they mocked Noach. What are you doing building a teva? The force of good is Noach, and the force of evil is the Dor, is a generation which had to be destroyed. We then come to Parshas Lech Lecha. And what do we have? What occupies a significant section of the parsha? Avram goes to war against the four kings. The four kings, well, we have what? Led by Nimrod, the four kings against the five kings. There was a war. They captured Lot, and the purpose of capturing Lot was in order to draw in Avraham to capture Avraham Ha'ivri. He was on one side of the world, and the four kings fell upon the five kings, and then they wanted to conquer Avraham Avinu. So we have a whole world war taking place in Parashas Lech Lecha. The forces of evil are
the beginning
of the Torah, and we have Avraham, who is the force of good. Okay, so it's very Parashas Vayera. What takes out the first being part of the parasha? Stone. A nice chunk of the parasha is Avram is mispalel, the people of stone, the force of evil, and the forces of good, Avraham. We then come to Parashas Chayei Sarah. And where is the debate? Eliezer is struggling with Lavan and Besuel. They don't want the shidduch to go through. They try to poison Eliezer. The miracle happens. They switch the plates, and Besuel dies, and so on and so forth. So we have good and bad. Toldos is very easy. Yaakov and Esav. The bracha is the bechayra. He steals the bechayra. Parshas Vayetze. Yaakov and Lavan. Lavan is trying to swindle, trying to steal from Yaakov. Parshas Vayishlach. Once again, we have. Vayira Yaakov Ma'od Vayetzalo, he's going to meet with Esav. Once again we have Yaakov and Esav. So look at that. We have over here the first eight parshios of the Torah. It's clear as day who the force of good is and who the force of evil is. And this is conflict, there's a struggle, and that really represents what the world is all about. Always a struggle between good and Toiv and Ra. Toiv and Ra. That's what it's all about. And the Maggid says, Rav Velvel said, that's what I do. I go around and I preach. I preach and I explain that there are forces of Toif, there are forces of Ra, and we have to overcome the Ra, and we look into the Parsha. The Parsha, we have a Koyach of Toif, a Koyach of Ra, and we have to learn from the Parsha how to prevail. But when I come to Parshas Vayeshev, I'm in a lot of trouble. Because in Parshas Vayeshev, it's all about the brothers, the struggle between Yosef and the brothers. But Yosef is a tzaddik, and the brothers are Shiftei Ka. We all come from the Shvatim. All the 11 brothers are Shiftei Ka. The machloikis between them is not something which is simple. It's not something which we can understand. How they can want to kill him and what they were thinking, what Yosef was thinking. We're dealing with Shiftei Ka. It's not clear. It's a gray area. What's toiv and what's ra? I have a very difficult time with this parsha. Here, you're coming, you're inviting me here to help you solve a problem between two Gedolei Yisrael, the Briskerov and the Nitziv. They're both Toif. How do you expect me to find a solution in between two Tzadikim? It's like trying to find a resolution between Yosef and his brothers. It's a very interesting idea. And especially true because Parsha Vayeshev is always, kemat, always Erev Chanukah. It's the parsha which leads into Chanukah. And Chanukah, to a certain degree, that's what Chanukah was about. Chanukah was not, besides the fact that it was Antiochus, it was the Goyim, it was the Syrian Greeks that were trying to cause trouble, but it was in the bigger picture of things, it was a war among Jews themselves. To what degree secular society should play a part in our Jewish life? Yaft elokim liyafes v'yishkoin v'ohol leishem. It's a pasuk in the Torah. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says that we shall take all of the mailois of Yafes, of Yavan. Yavan represents beauty, represents culture. It represents the sophistication of living life, a life in the modern world, and incorporating that into Yahadus. And the miracle of Chanukah wasn't just a miracle where we were fighting against the Syrian Greeks. There were civil wars. There were Hellenized Jews. And the way the Goyim fought us, fought the Perushim, fought the Jews that were 100% loyal to Kadosh Baruch Hu, is not by directly attacking us, but by influencing powerful Jews, and those Jews would stir up problems to influence, to make life difficult for the other Jews that were true to Torah mitzvahs. It was a struggle, Jew against Jew. Where you draw the line in Yaft Elokim Liyafes V'Yishkoin Be'ohol Eishen. There is no question that there is something to take from the world. The sophistication, the chokhmah, the yoifi that the world has to offer, and to use that to enhance Yadus. It's a pasuk in the Torah. Yaft Elokim Liyafes V'Yishkoin Be'ohol Eishen. But you have to know where to draw the line. And that is an extremely great danger. And it was one Jew against another Jew. And that is where life gets extremely complicated. Where your enemy is defined, then it's easy. Where the enemy is not defined, and there's a gray area, that's the difficulty. That is Parshas Vayeshev. It's no longer black and white. It's no longer Yaakov Esav. It's no longer Adam versus the Nachash. It's no longer Yaakov versus Lavan. No more. It's a lot more complicated than that. It's Yosef and the Shiftei Ka. Elu ve'elu divrei Elokim Chaim. Kishem she'partzufim enam shavos, kach deosim enam shavos. There are no two people that think alike. There are no two people who have the same hashkafa. Every person has their own unique way to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And for one person's approach to a serving HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it may be very strange for someone else. Who's to say? But everything has to be rooted in Torah and Yiras Shamayim. And unfortunately, this is where all machlokes breaks out, and that's what this parsha is all about. And it's always a prelude to the miracle of Chanukah, And the difficulty and the sakon of Hanukkah is where we allow a hashkafa that's not 100% to affect us in a way that is not proper in the eyes of Hashem. Okay, that's one part. Let's go to another part. A remes. I find this to be a beautiful remes. The Gemara Masechta Bracha says, if a person sees the letter Tes, I saw this in Rabbi Wolfson's Sefer, Emuna Sitecha, and one of the Kuntresim, I do not know which year, there are at least 15 years of Kuntresim. Baruch Hashem, I think I have them all. So I have a certain note, but one of the Kuntresim, I think I saw the following remes. It says in the Gemara Masechta Bracha that if a person sees the letter Tes in a dream, Simen Yafeh Hula. End of Masechta the Brachas. It's a good sign. Why? Because the first time the letter Tes appears in the Torah is in connection with the word Toiv. So Tes is symbolic of good. And if when you're dreaming you see the letter Tes, they're sending you a message in heaven that things are going to be good for you. This week is the ninth parsha of the Torah. Parshas Vayeshev, Bereshis, Noach, Lech Lecha, Vayera, Chayisara, Toldos, Vayetze, Vayishlach, and now Vayeshev. It's the ninth parsha of the Torah. What is the ninth pasuk in this week's parsha? So let me read for you the psukim in the beginning of Vayeshev, the first pasuk. Vayeshev Yaakov Yeretz Mugrev Yeretz Canaan. Okay, that's pasuk number one. Pasuk base. Eile toldos Yaakov Yosef and Shvasa Shana, so on and so forth. Okay. Pasuk number three. The Yisrael Ohav Es Yosef. Pasuk number four. Vayiru Echav Ki Yosef Ohav Avim Mikol Echav Vayisnu Oso. Pasuk five. Okay, he has a dream. It's not what I was expecting. I didn't prepare this probably, but don't worry. Vayachaloim Yosef Chaloim. He had his dream. Okay, Pasuk Vav Vayomer Aleihem. Tells him the dream. Zayin. Let me just jump down to Pasuk Tes. Pasuk Tes. Vayachaloim Oid Chaloim Acher. He has another dream. Vayisaper Oisav Leecha Vayomer Hinei Chalamdi Chaloim Oid Vinei Hashemesh Ve'erech Ve'achad Asok Echav Mishtachavim Li. It's a good week this week, because this week is the ninth parsha, and the ninth pasuk of the ninth parsha is all about dreams. Vayachalim oid chalim acher, another dream. So it's a simin toif. You come to parsha Vayeshev, the ninth parsha, test, two tests. You have dreams. It's a shemesh vahirech v'achad osrek l'chav mishtachavim li. This is a sign. There is good tidings for us here in this week's parsha. Okay, let's go to another part. Now, there is a very peculiar pasuk. Pasuk base. Eile toldos Yaakov. Now, this is a ha'ara, an observation. You can make out of it what you wish, but I want to give you some chomer. Eile toldos Yaakov Yosef ben Shvasre Shana Haya Roye. What was he doing, Yosef? He was a shepherd. He was a shepherd together with his brothers. They would shepherd the sheep of their father. Vuhunar, he was a young man. He was 17 years old. Rashi says he did things that young men do. And that is, they comb their hair, nice long hair. Your hair at that age grows very nicely. And maybe they had some mousse, some other things they would put into their hair. I do not know. But he had a hairstylist. He made sure his eyes were perfect. He should look beautiful. Okay, that's not the point I want to make. Then it goes on to say, Es b'nei vilha v'es b'nei zilpa nishayotif. Who did he hang out with? He did not hang out with Reuven, Shimon, Levi, Yehuda. He didn't hang out with the brothers that were the children of Leah. He hung out with the children of the Shvachas. Very interesting. Why did he hang out with Reuven and Shimon and Levi? He liked the Nirdaf. He liked, why? Because these, the Shvatim, the children of the Shvachos, were abused. They were abused. Pasuk goes on to say, "Vayavei Yosef es dibosom ro'o el aviyem." He brought a slanderous report to their father. So what is going on, Rashi? Let me read you the words of Rashi, Pasuk Beis. Es dibosom ro'o. Well, let me read Rashi before. As b'nei vilha kiloimar. Every time Rashi says kiloimar, that is a stop sign. That's a warning. Warning statement. Rogil eitzel b'nei vilha l'fi shahayu echav mevazin oisan. The brothers, we mevazin them. Who? Because they were just low class citizens. Their mother was a shifcha, a maidservant, a pilegesh, a shifcha. And Yosef was very kind, very gracious, benevolent. He took care of them. Mekarvan. As dibosam ra'ah, what is the name? Kol ra'ah shayaroye be'echav b'nei le'ah hayamagid le'aviv. He only said bad things about, Rashi is very careful, b'nei le'ah. He never said a bad word about the children of the Shvachis. When he saw the children of Leah, that not the children of Rachel, because there were no children besides himself and Binyamin, and Binyamin was an infant, so there's nothing for Binyamin to do, possibly to do wrong. The only ones that he can say bad about were Leah and Bilah and Zilpah. Bilah and Zilpah, he had nothing bad to say about, but he said bad things about B'nai Leah. And in fact, the Mepharshim put this with the Rashi before, and they say basically what he would tell their father was, the children of Reuven, of Leah, are being mevazeh, the children of the Shvachos. That was the primary Lashon Hara that Yosef gave over to Yaakov. Yaakov, my father, you have children from four wives. Let's put that. Rachel aside, because it's only me and Binyamin. Another three wives. Your children from Rachel, from Leah, are being mevazeh, your children from the Shvachos. That was the primary Lashon Hara that Yosef gave to Yaakov. Okay, now, let's go further in the parasha. Who was the one that saved the life of Yosef? All the brothers decided they were going to kill him. Now, it's a fascinating thing that even the B'nai Bilah v'Zilpah, it's amazing. Even they were brainwashed by the B'nai Leah. We have no problem understanding why B'nai Leah wanted to kill Yosef. Because he was a Roidef, right? He's a Roidef. Every day he goes to the father. He says Lashon Hara. Okay. But what about B'nai Bilah v'Zilpah? Yosef hung out with them. He was good to them. He defended them. He gave Selash and Hara to the father what they were doing. Obviously, obviously they were very sophisticated, the B'nai Reuven. If you have any experience in politics, you don't need any elaboration. They were very sophisticated, the B'nai Leah, and they were able to brainwash, to convince the B'nai Zilpah and B'nai Bilah, come along with us. We're going
to
vote.
Right.
It could be, but they didn't protest. They didn't make a macha. They did not hold back the B'nai Reuven from carrying out their plan. Fascinating.
Group mentality.
Like gang mentality. Yeah. Gang and mobs. It's a fascinating insight because all the Shvatim are blamed. They're all clearly blamed for what has happened. Now, all of a sudden, one of the 11 brothers, 10 brothers, only 10 brothers, because the 12 in total, Yosef and Yamin, has a change of heart. So let me ask you, if you were taking a guess, there's a change of, someone suddenly has a change, who would you think has a change of heart? One of the B'nai Bilah of Zilpah. You know, he was good to us. And you know, we're being bullied by the older, more powerful brothers. But you know, we gotta put your foot down. The one that took a stand was none other than Reuven, the Bechor of Leah. Now let me it's a Pella. Reuven. He was the main gangster. He was the main gangster. If he had a time, they would be Mavaz, the B'nai Shvachai. So who is the leader? Who is the Bechor of the B'nai Leah? Reuven. Let me go a step further. You go back to Parshas, last week's Parsha. It says in the Torah that after the death of Rachel, so what happened? Vayishkav Reuven es Bilah Pilegesh Aviv. Reuven, it says that he did something with the Pilegesh, with Bilah. And Rashi there tells what happened. After Rachel died, Yaakov decided the Ikeres Habayis will be the Shivcha of Rachel. Who the shivcha of Rachel Bilah. Reuven says, how dare you? It was bad enough when Rachel was alive, and Rachel was a real wife, that she was a tzara, a co-wife. She was a source of pain for my mother. My mother produced 6 children. Rachel only produced 2 children. My mother got married first. Okay, who says even about the story of the Simonim and Yaakov, Ahav es Rachel? My mother was the Keres Abayis. It's bad enough there was a woman, Rachel, that was a tzara, co-wife, and a source of pain for my mother. And now when Rachel dies, Yaakov is going to put his bed in the tent of her shivcha? How could this be? So he took matters into his own hand. He took the bed out of the tent of Bilah and put it in the tent of Rachel. So here, not only did Reuven, we have to assume, it doesn't say explicitly, assume that he led the way in the Mivaza. He was the Bechor of the Bnei Leah. If it says here that the Bnei Leah were Mivaza, the Bnei HaShvachos, we have a right to assume that Reuven was a partner in this because he was the senior brother. He tolerated this. He at least tolerated it.
Feel they were guilty of it?
What? Yeah. No, they didn't feel they were guilty. No one feels. Anyone doesn't know they thinks they're a tzaddik. That's the mitzvah. It's a mitzvah. Yeah. All right. So we have a right to assume that Reuven was a partner in this sin of the Mavazah because he was the oldest of the Bnei Leah. But more than that, he did the ultimate brazen act to show his contempt for the Bnei Shvachas. He took the bed out of the tent of Bilah, the Shifcha, of the, and put the bed in the home of his mother, Leah. I mean, that's the ultimate. That goes to show, to reinforce that they're second-class citizens. These two women, Bilah and Zilpah, are second-class citizens, and their children are certainly second-class citizens, and the only one that counts is my mother, Leah, and her children. So this is, and yet, who was the one that decided to save, let me read you the pasuk, Yosef. It was Reuven. It's an incredible pasuk. What about pasuk? Pasuk of Aleph. In which parak? Lamed Zayin. Pasuk Chaf Aleph. Vayishma Reuven. Vayatzilehu miyadam. Vayoyme loy nakenu nofesh. Hafle vafela. So now there are two points I want to make from this. First of all, you see from this a yisod in life. You don't know who your friends are. It's an incredible insight. You really don't know in life who your friends are. A lot of times, a person finds himself, whether it's in a situation at work or here or there, family situations, difficult situations, and there are fights. So, who's going to come and squash me? So, there's a history. There's a history. Who would you expect would be the ringleader to put an end to Yosef? Reuven. Mavaza, he's the one who spoke all the Lashon Hara on us, and he's the one, and Reuven was the one that was openly switched the bed, and yet it was Reuven who had all the reason in the world to hate Yosef more than anyone else, because Yosef was the one that told their father that look what they're doing to the Bnei Shvachos. He's the one that revealed the sin, opened up the sin of Reuven. Reuven committed this crime of being mevazeh in an open way of the Bnei Shvachos, and the one that exposed him, the whistleblower of Reuven and put him out of business was Yosef. So Reuven has all the reason in the world to hate Yosef more than any more of the brothers, because he was the most guilty in the crime, and he was exposed the most. He was the one that was the target of Yosef's Lashon Hara more than anyone else. And yet it was Reuven that came to the defense of Yosef, saved his life. You don't know in life who your real friends are. Well, I'm coming down in a second. Yeah. Well, the second point is something very bizarre. So Reuven says, I'm going to save you. Right, Pasuk, you told me the Pasuk, Vayishma Reuven, Vayatzlem Yodam, Vayom Eloina, Kenon Nofesh, Vayom Alem Reuven, Al Tishpichu Dom, Hashlicho Yisrael, Labor Hazah, Asher, Bamidbar, Vyod, Al Tishkuvo, Leman, Hatzilo, Sam Yodam, Lashivolov, he's going to save him. Unbelievable. Okay, so why doesn't he carry through? All of a sudden, Rabbeisai, I have to go somewhere. I'll be back in 10 minutes. Behave yourselves while I'm away. He goes away, and then all of a sudden, there comes over here a caravan of Yishmaelim and Midonim, and they decide, oh, you know what, let's sell him. And all of a sudden, Reuven comes back 10 minutes later, Vayoshav Reuven el Habar. What? Where is he? Vihine ein Yosef Abor Vayikra v'godav, he rips his, the rice is clear. Where is he? Rashi, where'd he go? If you already put into motion a plan to save Yosef, where are you running away? Rashi says, "Uvimchirasi lo hayashan." Why? So one shot is shigei yoimai leilech ulashamish es aviv. It was his day to serve his father. Okay, dover acher. Also koye besakoy uvitaaniso. He was busy mourning, wearing sackcloth and fasting. That morning, he was doing tshuva. Al shabilbel yitzue aviv. He was doing tshuva. Now you're doing tshuva. Now you're doing tshuva. You do tshuva tomorrow. Why all of a sudden was he inspired at this very moment? The answer is, this is exactly all part of the process of tshuva. When Yosef attacked him and told his father, you know they're being mevazeh, the b'nei shvachos, they're being mevazeh them. And you know who the ringleader is? It's Reuven. And I'll prove you it's Reuven. What's the proof it's Reuven? Reuven was the one that was mebalbel yitzui aviv. He said, what kind of thing is this? A shifra is going to go be the Ikeres Abayis. A shifra? They're second class citizens. Reuven accepted the Musar. He did tshuva. And part of the tshuva was twofold. Number one, he was mesabel. He sakoi v'tanisoi. To mourn. I don't mean mourning. I really mean to fast. He was mourning. He was in the state of doing tshuva, of fasting and wearing sackcloth, different things that a person does when he repents. But this was part of the tshuva. It's not another element. The reason why Reuven, it was Bedavka Reuven, who went backwards out of his way to save the life of Yosef, that's part of the tshuva. It's not just Stam Reuven. People, why Reuven? Why not Shimon Levi Yehuda? It's precisely because Reuven was the most guilty. He had the greatest reason to hate Yosef. And Reuven made a cheshbon hanevesh and said, you know something, Yosef is right. I was mevazeh the b'nei shvachos. And how was I mevazeh the b'nei shvachos? Look what I did to their mother. I publicly took her bed away. I took the bed out of the tent. I was mevazeh. I'm taka guilty. Yosef is right. If Yosef is right, he doesn't deserve to die. Everything that he did when he brought the report to my father, he was justified. He doesn't deserve to die. So look at this. The sin of Reuven was the cause of saving the life of the brother, of saving his brother's life. Look, he took a sin and used that sin as an opportunity, or the result was the tshuva is so great. Tshuva magasa kisei hakavod is that process of tshuva is what saved the life of Yosef HaTzadik. What? Yudin Tamar. Tzad kamimeni. Another theme in the parasha. Tzad kamimeni. Yeah.
Two counts. One, I think Reuven realized how serious a thing he did for his father, Yaakov.
Okay.
And he knew Yaakov loved Yosef deeply. Of all his children, we see it. And it was a jealousy. I think in Reuven's mind, and mind you, he was the Bechor.
Okay.
Not for him, Yosef.
Correct.
Not for Leah, Yosef was the Bechor. And he said, I can't let this happen to my father again. I missed it. I messed it up one time.
That's another approach. Yeah. That's another approach, right?
And the proof is,
it's
Rabbi Olofsky's approach. Why didn't Yaakov admonish Reuven for what he did at the time he did it? Why did he wait for a key? He gave the brother.
Yes.
He admonished Reuven first then. When he said to him,
okay, so what does he say? Okay.
Rabbi Olofsky has an interesting answer. He said, if he admonished Reuven then, Reuven would have been so depressed. It's possible he would have gone over to Esau. And Esau would have said, yeah, you know, you're right. Your father did the same thing.
Right. You have to let a person realize it on his own.
Yes.
You have to be very careful when you give mussar. When to give mussar, when not to give mussar. Absolutely. But the only point I want to make is to bring these two ideas together. Most people, when you learn Chumash, they're two separate things. Reuven did an Aveira. He was Mabalbel Yitzui Aviv. That's one parasha. There's another parasha that the Shvatim B'nei Leah, they were Mevazeh the B'nei Shvachos. They're not two separate things. It's all one and the same. The B'nai Leah U'mevazeh, the Shvatim, who was the most respected, the one, the leader of the B'nai Leah, it was Reuven. Reuven even went a step further in his Bizyonos, is where he was Mababa Litzoyaviv. And that's why Reuven had all the reason in the world, and then who exposed him? Yosef exposed him. And Reuven had all the reason in the world to hate Yosef more than anyone else, because he was the target of Yosef's Musar. And yet Reuven saved him. And it only comes through admission, tzadka mimeni, similar to what Yehuda said about Tamar, tzadka mimeni. And that's exactly why at that moment in time when he saved Reuven, he was overwhelmed with a recognition that Yosef is right, and now is the time I have to do tshuva. It's not just happened to be that's when he did tshuva. Taking Yosef out, saving the life of Yosef, is what sparked his desire now. That's part of the tshuva process. I recognize Yosef is right. I am wrong. He doesn't deserve to die. I have to save him. And part of saving him, I now have to do tshuva. I have to fast and be oisik b'tzaka b'tanisa. And that's why he was not present. It's all part of the process of saving Yosef. It's not two separate things. Oh, he saved Yosef. And then he has another issue. He has a thing. He has the bizutrei. He has on his calendar. He has to choose what he did with his father 10 years ago. No! By saving Yosef, that's all part and parcel of doing the tshuva of war, being Mababel Yitzuei Aviv. Yeah.
I think I read in the Medrash something that Reuven had known that he would have written up.
Right. He would have done it a lot greater.
Put him on his shoulders.
Yeah. Right.
With the breast.
Okay, that's a whole different Indian. Aaron, Boaz, three different Ishei HaTanach. Had they known, they would have done. So what exactly does that mean? There are a lot of different ideas, approaches to understand that Medrash. Okay, I want to go to another short idea. In this week's parasha, we have Vayimo'ein. The Eishes Potiphar tries very hard to seduce. It's towards the end of the parasha. I don't know the exact pasuk, but the Eishes Potiphar, right after Shalsheles Vayimo'ein, she desperately tries to pasuk perik lamites pasuk ches Vayimo'ein. So Vayachadam Rilavati Eishes Adonav es Einecha El Yosef Vaytomer Shechva Imi. She tries to seduce Yosef, and Yosef refuses. And how does he refuse? With this word, Vayimo'ein. And we have a Shalshelis, a very unusual trop, which brings out the idea, the expression that he refused again and again and again. He did not, but just as she was adamant in her request, he was even more adamant in his refusal, Vayimo'ein. Now, it's not a coincidence that there's another place in this week's parsha that we have the same exact word, Vayimo'ein. And where is that? When the brothers brought the Ksoines Pasim of Yosef, dipped in blood, to their father, and said, Chayor o acholosu, toroif toraf Yosef, he's been devoured by ferocious animal. And Pasim, Vayimo'ein lehisnachem, all of his sons and daughters, who are his daughters? We know he had daughters. Yaakov had daughters. Either it means daughter-in-laws, or it means that with each one of the Shvatim, there was a twin daughter. Okay, as a half-sister, there was a daughter was born as a twin to each one of the Shvatim, but all of his sons and daughters rose up to an attempt to give him comfort. Vayimo'ein lehisnachem. So the Darshanim, they try to connect these two Vayimo'ein. It's not a Balaturim. It's not a Balaturim. Okay. I don't think at least it's not a Balaturim. To refuse. And he refused. So by Yosef, when the Eishes Potiphar tried to seduce him, it says Vayimo'ein, he refused to agree to her request of Shechva Imi. And when the children of Yaakov tried to give comfort, to provide comfort for their father, Vayimo'ein lehisnachem, he refused to accept to be comforted, to accept comfort. I'm going to mourn for this for the rest of my life, the death of my son Yosef, or the thought that he died. So the question is, it's too much of a coincidence to say that this same word appears. I mean, how often does it appear in Tanakh? You have to go exactly the same letters. What does it say there?
Because that he refused to to give up his
stock for Aver. Okay, but how often does it appear? So how often does it appear, at least in the same parsha, and juxtapose these two parshios, the word Vayimoein? There must be some significance. It struck me because the story made a very strong impression on me. There's a biography of Rav Meir Stern, Zechet Tzadik Lebracha. Rav Meir Stern was the Mashkiach in Panovich or Kamenitz. I'm forgetting. He was a very tremendous Talmid Chachmi. He is the father of the very famous, I don't know if you know, Yechiel Michel Stern. He's a very big Talmid Chachmi in Eretz Yisrael. He's a celebrity in Eretz Yisrael. His name is Yechiel Michel Stern. He wrote probably 50 Svarim. Each Sefer is a bestseller. He's a genius of geniuses. So this is his father. His father was a very, very holy person. And there's a beautiful biography. It was written originally in Hebrew and then it was translated into English, and many years ago I read the book, and there was only one thing I remember about the book, only one thing that struck my mind, and I don't remember the details, but there was a day when he was not well. Rav Yechiel Michel Stern, he wasn't feeling well, or he was tired, and so they said, "Why are you tired?" And he said, "I'm fasting." "Why are you fasting? What's it? It's not Tainus Esther. It's not." And after a discussion, it was revealed that he was a mashkiach, and as you know in yeshiva, not every boy does what they're supposed to do. There are a lot of boys that get into a lot of trouble, and they don't learn, they don't want to learn, and they're borderline. Today, the term's at risk, right? They're children at risk, and he had such talmidim that were at risk. They're holding on by a shoestring, a hair's breadth, and who knows where they can go, and he worked with these boys, he struggled them, and he revealed that he was fasting. He was fasting, a series of fast days, and that suchus, this boy, should not go off the derech. Can you imagine today in yeshiva, a mashkiach has such chiba? People don't even do this for their own children. For themselves, certainly not. For their own children, they don't do this. And here, he took such an interest in his talmid. Not only did he spend with them day and night and learn with them and do everything he possibly could do with them, but on a spiritual level, he would daven for them and would fast. "I'm fasting. I'm scared. I'm scared for my talmid. What's going to become of him? He's on the verge of going off the derech. I'm being misspelled. Hashem, guide him. Take away from him the distractions that can cause him to go off. To just happen like that." Incredible. That's the pshat in these two vayimoeins. Yosef was 17 years old, or a little bit older. Chazal tell us that the nisoyon was so great, it's not to be understood how he could refuse to give in to Eishes Potiphar. He's all alone in Mitzrayim. There's no one watching. There's no one there. He's in the prime of his taivas, the age where the taiva is beyond control. Not like today, this closed circuit TV, and everyone knows your IP address is recorded and everything. It's not like it is today. There's no one. He's in Egypt, far away. And she every single day comes after him again and again and again. The nisyonos, it's maver al harayon, how Yosef HaTzadik was able to overcome this nisyon in this, after all the things that he's been through and all the tzaris, try to recreate the situation. It's beyond us. We just read like a big deal, you know, we just go to the parasha. But if you really think deeply down into this parasha, it's beyond human comprehension how Yosef was able to withhold. Yet vayimoein, it's not so simple when you learn vayimoein al shalshelas. He's not only learning it because he refused again and again. He should take note of the incredible miracle that happened vayimoein. How was he zeicha? Where did he get the siyata d'shmaya of vayimoein? You know why? Because his father didn't give up on him. Vayimoein lehisnachin. The two are connected. Yaakov Avinu heard that he died. Taraif taraf Yosef. Vayimoein lehisnachin. cannot be. It cannot be. I will not accept comfort. There has to be an explanation. There has to be a solution. He's my Yosef. I gave him the Seudos of Torah. Everything that I learned in Shem Va'Ever, I put into him. I put in so much Koichos into that child. It can't just come to an end like this. Vayimo'ein lehisnachi. When you put in such Koichos into a person, to a child, into a friend, we don't realize, we don't know how it works. But in Shemayim, there is some type of mechanism where the siyata deshmaya vayimo'ein, he refused to listen to Eishes Potiphar.
Wasn't there a
Medrash
that he had visions of his father?
Right, that's a Rashi. Rashi that he appeared to him. That's another Mahalas. A Medrash, his father appeared to him in a window in a chaloy. I'm going to come down in a few moments. He appeared in a window, and Yosef, if you realize, if you do this Aver, you're not going to. But these two go together. And therefore, a person should realize the lesson is when you put Koichos into your friends, into your children, into anything that you do in life, don't think for one moment that it's for nothing. Hashem takes note of the effort and energy that you give over to your friends and family, and that brings about a siyata deshmaya from the other end, which cannot be explained al derech hateva, why things work out the way they do. These two vayimoins are intertwined. Yeah. Yeah.
That vayetze, my room is same a.
Right. And here it says four times Vayetze. There's a medrash which connects those two Vayetzes. It says here in this parasha four times the word Vayetze corresponds to Vayetze. Hashem took Avraham Avinu Achutza. Chutza, don't look at the stars. It's right. Beyond. It's you are beyond Derech Hateva. There is a Koyach Shadishmaya. Okay, let me tell you another var. Running out of time. Let me tell you another short var. Now this I saw this actually last week, and it just hit me with a das zekeinim that I saw this week. Avpam Zechet Tzadik Livracha, he used to give a lot of shmuzim about shidduchim, about shalom bayis, and all these inyanim. So I just read an essay written about Avpam was describing that today it's the minhag, right, wrong, to make lavish weddings. People make compared whether even if you had even the simplest wedding today is a lot more expensive, is a lot more lavish than what used to be in Poland when people didn't have what to eat. Okay, fine. Right, wrong. But Pam used to say, this was says in this essay, I saw this also in the pleasant way. There's one thing that he likes very much about weddings, about expensive weddings, the photography. People spend a hoin rav on a photographer, but Axelrod. He has a monopoly. A monopoly. He likes. You have to see this inside. He has no tightness on the photography. People spend a fortune of money to hire Rabbi Axelrod, the best photographer. See, I'm over here. Tape recorder people should listen to this. They should know to use your services. The best of the best.
Axelrod is the name of the rabbi?
He's the name of the world famous photographer. Why does he like the photographer? What is it that is appealing about having a good photographer, having a beautiful album, and all of the bells and whistles that come along with photography? Because it's a reality of life that after the wedding is over, there's a lot of stress, and every marriage goes through ups and downs, and it comes a point in time where it's not so simple. At that moment in time, what you should do is you take out the wedding album, you dust off the wedding album, and you see these beautiful pictures, and these pictures capture the essence of the event. The good photographer has the koyach to capture not just what you look like, but you capture the whole setting, the whole environment, the whole hergish, of all the barachos that your parents and your Rosh Yeshiva and Mishpach and your friends, what they've come to give you at that precious moment in time. And a good photographer has that koyach in capturing the whole spirit, the spirit And that includes that in order to capture the spirit, you have to have a lot of pictures, and it has to be packaged in a beautiful album in the proper way, and this incredible chokhmah. And with chokhmah, it costs a lot of money. Chokhmah is not for free, it costs money. What?
You're so involved with the wedding. You don't know what's happening.
Exactly. The moment but it's a tremendous chokhmah, and it costs money. It's not something which just take a few snapshots on a Polaroid camera. Don't even make the money with Polaroid cameras. But you just you have to do it the right way, and that requires expense, and it's worth it because when life is difficult, you got to take out that album and look, and that's a tremendous chizuk for the family, for the husband, wife, the children, for the family. It's very, very important. This is what our Pam says. A very interesting insight. I don't think you'll hear other Rosh Yeshivas talking like this.
No.
Okay, but this is Rav Pam. Fascinating, fascinating insight into the way he thought. Okay, now, I saw this, not this week's parashah. Now, I saw this week an incredible Das Zikain. Das Zikain, it's in the Bali Taisvis, appears in the very back of the Mikros Gedolos. It's a hidden gem, which not everyone knows about. It's quoted here and there. It's written very, it's from the Rishonim. We're going back over here almost 900 years, 1,000 years, when this was written. This is Kodesh Kodashim, what it says there. Now, when getting married, there's a minuk. One of the minhagim, you know, everyone learns Masechta Kedushin at some point in time. A way a man marries a woman is by giving her Kesef Kedushin. How do you marry a woman? Take a pruta, a coin, something that's worth even Shavu Kesef, something that's worth at least a pruta. A pruta today, it's a disagreement among the Paiskim, is it the smallest coin in society, which would mean a penny? Some will say no, it's a certain value of silver, which means it comes out today somewhere between 5 and 10 cents. Okay, well, chola pachas, if you give a quarter, it's for sure good. So, me'ikar hadin, if you give a woman a quarter, if you give a woman a quarter, and you say to her, hare at mikudesha sli bitabas zo, or zoo, that's depending on your orientation. You're a photographer, you probably hear it more than anyone else. Then, bitabas zoo, then you're married. But it's the minuk ha'olam. It is the minuk. Time, from time immemorial, the way a man is mekadesh nisha, you don't give her a quarter, you give her a tabas. The kesef kedushin is presented in the form of a ring. And you put the ring on the finger. Which finger? This finger, that finger, then she takes up another finger. What kind of ring? Make sure it doesn't have any designs, so there should not be any misunderstanding. Okay, whatever. But it's a ring. And the commentators, they struggle, they sweat, they really sweat. What is the source for this custom? Why is it a time-honored custom to be mekadesh nisha with a tabas? What's it all about? So the Das Zikainim says something. You look it up. If I had come a little earlier, I would have brought it. I would have taken it out and shown you inside. You look over here in this parasha. In this parasha, when Yehuda went and gave Tamar the three things: the tabas, the psil, and the mat. He gave her three things. Yehuda said to Tamar, he said that he wants to be with her. She said to him, what will you give me? He says, I'll give you sheep, I'll give you some sheep, I'll give you food. That's the most important thing. But where are your sheep? They're not here now. Well, what will be the mashkoin? So what do you want? I want your signet ring, I want your seal, your garment, and I want your mata, I want your staff, I want your three personal items. And he gave it to her, very bizarre, he gave it to her. He gave her his the most important things, his coat, and his signet ring, and his mata, the mata of Yehuda. Okay, fine. So the Das Zikainim says, what's going on over here? The whole question, the whole story is obviously very difficult, very bizarre. It's not for us to understand. We don't ask any questions. But what's going on over here? Zoynos, Mzane. So he says, some opinions said that he didn't marry her. He just had relations with her. Period. What it means, don't ask. It's not for us to understand. Then the Das Zikainim says, but some say, this is a Bali Tois. This is not this from the Rishonim. This is not a Medrash. This is on a different level. It's
Put down the Medrash.
It's not a Medrash. This is the Das Zikainim. It's a Rishayim, like a Toisus, Bali Toisus. Some say, Yesh Mefarsh, it doesn't say who the Mefarsh Shemar, it's a tradition. He married her. He wasn't just Mezana with her, a Bia out of wedlock. He was Mekadesher. He married her for the moment. And then they got divorced because he's not allowed just to live a life of Efkeros. So he married her. And then, I don't know, they got divorced, whatever that means. How did he marry? What?
just married her?
Okay, could be. I don't know. You have to see it in somebody. He definitely says he married her. How did he marry her? He gave her the tabas. The tabas was the kesef kedushin. That's what it says in Sod. Clear. Look it up. I challenge you. Look it up. It's right there. He gave her the tabas as kesef kedushin. Therefore, this is the earliest makar source that the minhag, the way to marry a woman, the kesef kedushin, that it says in Masechta Kedushin, harisha nikneis b'shloisha derachim, and the first is kesef, is to give her a ring. This is the makar of Mekadesh ring. Now, I saw this. I don't even remember where I saw this. I was so confused. Okay, I saw another mafarsh said, what does it mean then, the psil nematem? I don't know where it comes from. I thought it was the das hakein, but I looked it up, it's not there. The psil refers to the chuppah. Because the chuppah is typically made from cloth, and still represents cloth, and the matah are the four poles. You know, it's very interesting. If you go look at some of the minhagim, we don't do it the real way it should be done. There's a whole shiloh, well, I take that back, the different minhagim, of go to a chuppah, most of the time chuppah, the four poles are anchored into the ground. There's a halacha, how you make a chuppah. You just can't go make your own chuppah. The chuppah has to be with certain specifications. Minhag Yisrael. And according to some opinion, it should be held. And it used to be in ancient times, look in the old svarim, there was a kibbut. The same way you mechabe the Rosh Shiva with reading the ksuba or doing this bracha, that bracha, it was a kibbut to give out the holding of the poles to four different people. Yeah. You give out the poles because you have to have four matos, four poles, and the four poles, four per people. Some say it's better to hold it, some say it's not better to hold it, all different mahalakim, but there are four poles, and top of the poles is the cloth. So it says in the Mefarshim, we have to find the source for this. I do not know where this part comes, but the Mata and the Psil, he was Mekadesh with the Tabas, that is explicit in the Dasakenim. And what was the Psil in the Mata? Was the Chuppah. He gave her the Tabas in an open Chuppah. There were four people holding the Mata. Okay, mate is short for, there were four matos, a mate, and on top of the mate, there was a psil, there was a shmata, a cloth, and he gave her the tabas, and the tabas. Then, now this is the mosh, this is Jush, the capital D. This is the Jush of Pam. Pam says, there's one thing that's kedai to do for a wedding in this era, 21st century, he was in 21st century, have a good photographer, hire Rabbi Axelrod, have a good photographer. Why? Because the day will come when it will be a very good chizuk for your marriage to look back. What are you looking at? Let's take a step back. What happened with the Tamar? She's pregnant. She was a mezana, your daughter-in-law. Look what's going on over here. She's the daughter of Shem, a bas koyein. She was mezana. She has to be executed. Take her out. So what does Tamar do? Hakerna. Look, Leni. Look, hakerna. Look at the tabas, the chesemes, the psil, and you'll know what to do. What is modern photography today? It's the same pasuk. Hakerna. Lemi hachoisemes v'hamate v'hapsil. Who does this belong to? Look at the picture. What do you see in the picture? You see the chasan under the kala giving her the ring under the chuppah. You see the chesemes, the mate, the psil, hakerna. It worked to save the marriage of Yehuda and Tamar. Later. But at least now, the moment, it will work for Doiris. It will work for Doiris. Now, I don't want to leave you down a Chanukah of art, so let me tell you a very quick Chanukah of art before we run out of time. A Chanukah of art. It says, someone mentioned, someone says that the Nisoyon Chanukah is the 25th day of the 25th day of Kislev. Usually, always. The 25th day of Kislev. It says the Nisoyon of Eishes Batifa took place by Yehi Ki Hayoyim. All of the Mepharshim say, what's Ki Hayoyim? Well, don't say the whole thing, what's Ki Hayoyim? So the Merameh, since Vayeshev is always the Shabbos, Erev Chanukah, Vayehi Ki Hayoyim, it's Chof Hayoyim. It alludes to the 25th day of Kislev Chanukah. The Nisoyon of, what is the 25th day? We know that Yaakov Avinu, the Medrash tells us, Yaakov died on the first day of Sukkot. What happened after he died? The Egyptians mourned for him, it says in the Pasuk, for how many days? 70 days. In 70 days after the first day of Sukkot is the 25th day of Kislev. The 25th day of Kislev is the end of the influence, is when the influence of Yaakov Avinu begins to wear off. Yaakov died on Sukkot. No, he died. Yaakov Loimes. He's still with us. We're mourning for him. How long could you maintain? How long can you maintain that stamina of mourning? For 70 days. When you get to day 70, you lose the influence of Yaakov Avinu. What happened? Vayhi kihayam. Someone learned. It's a stretch that the nesoyon of Eishes Petifar took place on Chanukah. It took place. What happened? He was about to give in. And who appeared to him? The Demus Diokno of Yaakov Avinu. Where did it appear? It appeared b'chaloin, in the window. It appeared in the window. Very interesting measure in the window. And that was mechazekim. That is what Chanukah is all about. Yosef, it was Mechazek Yosef. The Yom Tov of Chanukah is just as Yosef was able to sing the image of his father on the 25th day, Vayikeh Hayom, to give him koyach to renew himself and be oimed in the nesoyon. That's really what the Yom Tov of Chanukah is all about. We are now 70 days away from Sukkot. The Hashpah, you go through the Yom Narami, it's a very inspiring time. Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, Sukkot, wow, Simchas Torah, you walk away on a high. But then it wears off. How long can it stay with you? It can't stay with you more than 70 days. We come to Chanukah, we're weak, we need chizuk. And what do we do? What does it say in the Mishnah Berurah from the Knesset HaGadolah? Where do you put the Chanukah menorah b'zman hazeh? The minig is to put it b'chaloin. B'chaloin. It's the same v'ayihi k'hayoim. 25th day of Kislev. And we look in the window, what do we see? A ner. What's the ner? Ner Elokim Nishmas Adam. We're seeing the ner of Chanukah is the ner of Yaakov. It's inspiration. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Ima Yinochi B'tzara, I'm there with you. It's a chizuk for us to renew, to re-energize, to relight ourselves, to refresh ourselves, now when we're coming to the weakest point in the year. Just like Yaakov Avinu needed renewal after 70 days, Yaakov Yosef needed renewal, and Yaakov Avinu came by Hikir Hayoin. That's exactly what we reenact on Chanukah. The Nes of Chanukah is a renewal, a refreshing of the Ruach Mizrach Kodesh Baruch Hu on this 25th day when we look at the Chanukah and the Chaloin like Yaakov Avinu. Have a wonderful Shabbos, and we'll meet Hashem Monday 9:30.